You're listening to the Volleyball by Design podcast. Today, we have another special guest on the podcast, a national team coach, as well as the head coach of the Loyola University out in Chicago men's volleyball team, Coach John Hawks. And I got to tell you, this episode is fantastic. He really has an interesting mindset about the game. He's been around for a long time. He's been an assistant coach on some of the top programs in the country, as well as been a part of our national team program for a long time. Well, the U.S. men's national team program for a long time. And his wealth of knowledge, the way that he coaches and his philosophy on the game and his approach to coaching is really cool and intuitive and innovative. And he dives into some system talk that I absolutely love. I'm a systems guy. And he talks about how intentional his training is because of some of the best coaches that he's got a chance to work with. And he talks about and dives into how to train intentionally with understanding systems and all this great volleyball conversation. So anyways, I don't want to get too much into it. I can't wait for you to hear this episode. So it's an episode you don't want to miss. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Coach Brian Singh, and after a number of years coaching competitive volleyball and as the head coach of the biggest college in Canada, I've become obsessed with helping coaches improve their knowledge and skills of the game by teaching them how to coach efficiently and effectively to ultimately reach their volleyball goals. I created the Volleyball by Design podcast to give you simple, actionable, step-by-step strategies so you can get clarity and apply what you learn right away. This is the Volleyball by Design podcast. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 201 of the Volleyball by Design podcast. How is everyone doing out there today? We got another good one for you today. For my new listeners, welcome to the podcast. My name is Coach Brian Singh, and I'm the host of the podcast. And to my regular listeners, as always, thank you so much for tuning into another episode where the goal, just like every week, is to deliver a tangible step-by-step strategies that you can take back to your gym and apply right away. And I think we're going to be able to do that again today. We've had a number of amazing guests in the last couple months, and we got another great guest for you. Former assistant coach at UCLA with Sproul over there. Also worked with the national team. He will be working with the national team again this year. And he's the current head coach at Loyola out in the U.S. So welcome, Coach John Hawks, to the podcast. What's going on, man?
No, it's good to see you, Brian. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm so excited to jump on this convo. Now, in case anyone doesn't know who you are, you want to just talk a little bit about yourself and how you got to this point of being the head coach?
Yeah, I think just originally I started out, I think the good thing about maybe my experience so far is that I was able to coach club volleyball as well as high school. So I've learned how to deal with every single level of volleyball, you know, good players, bad players, really a lot of bad players, to be honest with you. And truthfully, like, you know, I didn't go looking for a college job. It wasn't something I ever thought I would do. I was working full time in the medical field. And John Sproul gave me my first opportunity in 2003 at UC Irvine. And I'd coached some junior college ball and high school. So I've really, truly coached at every single level. And even 14s club and 16s club. And then I, you know, with Balboa Bay, I was the 17s most of the time and some 18s. But when I got to coach at UC Irvine with John, it was cool to be around all those great athletes, but also just around Coach Raw and, you know, learning from him. It was an amazing start to my college career. And then I went to, I went from there to USC with Bill Ferguson and got an opportunity to kind of turn that program around. And at Irvine, we had a lot of success. So Bill gave me a lot of autonomy at USC to kind of do what I needed to do. And then went from there to Long Beach State, got a chance to work with Alan Knipe and the national team. And then after that run, I did an academy program out in Ohio, trying to do that at a sports institute. And then Sproul called me back up at UCLA and goes, hey, let's get back together. Let's do this. And had a nice run at UCLA before this opportunity at Loyola showed up. So here we go.
That's wild. Okay, so before I ask you my first question, now that I've seen all where you've been around. In your experience, being part of all these successful programs, what have you found that's a commonality among all these great programs you've been a part of that led to their success? What is it like that you got to take to your program, perhaps? Anything that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think, guy, you got me with a good question here, Brian. I think there's just an intention to how you train, I think, is something that's really important. I think those coaches that I worked with really had a good idea of that. Not just to go out there with, hey, we're gonna do this. Like, what are we doing a drill for? Why are we running a drill where we have a second ball or a third ball, and what is the focus on that second and third ball? So there's a system that we're trying to work. I've certainly brought that to Loyola, and I think, you know, we're what, number two in the country in hitting percentage right now. So I feel like, you know, and it's funny, it's UCLA is one and we're two. So that system development, I think, is something that I've really kind of gravitated towards as a coach. I've learned more about practice planning and design and how much effort you have to put into that part of the practice. But I think a lot of coaches don't think about it until what, you know, a half hour before practice. You know, I think good coaches are prepared the night before about, okay, what are the things we need to work on, and how are we going to tackle maybe not everything, because you can't get to everything in every practice. So you have to pick and choose how to run a drill, and then how does that roll into the next drill, and then how does it roll into the next practice, and then how does that roll into that first match? And can you also keep your guys fresh? There's so many factors, but I think just I think I answered the question, but to me, it's probably more system development as of late.
Right. Okay. So let's dive into that. I'm going off a tangent here because you said some great things here. Intention on how to train. I love that idea. Like, system, what drills to you. So can you give me an example of what you're talking about where it says, well, all these coaches had intention when they trained. So how do you describe that? How do you know that they had intention when they trained? What's behind that?
Yeah, I think so. So I'll go to Coach Fraw, and you know, because I've coached probably most of my career with him. But I would say a good example would be, okay, so if you're working on short side attacking, okay, so the you might have you have a live serve, and then you have a coach spin a ball in, or somebody jump and snap a ball into the libero. The libero is going to place the ball in certain parts of the court that force us into a system, right? So if it's, again, like I just described, as a short side attack, then it pushes the setter forward. And then how does the outside hitter attack? Do they stay inside? At what tempo? And then at what point does the middle either stay in front or cut it off and go behind? And then what are you doing with your back row attack behind that? And it has to be trained. And so that's one example, but we spend a lot of time working on various systems based on, really, I probably only do five or six drills, but there's a lot of variation to each of those drills. So it might be like, hey, today we're doing alternating toss, and the guys, okay. They know the setup of the drill. They know the nuts and bolts of it, but they don't know necessarily like what are the criteria of the drill that we're trying to work on, if that makes sense.
I got it. Okay, so when you're thinking about intention, you're training specific situations that could occur in a game, and seeing how they adapt to, like, so for example, in your down ball to lib, short side ball, let's see how our offense is approaching based on a ball that's, you know, passed or dug to this side of the court. Is that kind of, yeah,
And
so
there's always like decisions that have to be made on the court. Like I said, does the middle stay in front or go behind? Does
right.
the big guy stay on a big, or does he go down the middle of the court, or does he go on a 40?
Right.
Is the outside hitter on big tempo? Are they inside the court or outside the court? Like, personally, I don't want my guys outside the court, so I make sure that they're definitely inside the court on that set. And with
Right.
today's day of the game, everything's run super fast. I run fast to certain guys, and I run with Parker Van Buren overhead. I mean, he touches 12 feet. I'm not going to run fast. That's just not smart. So we let him climb on the ball and go over the top of the block.
Right. So how many, I mean, I don't know if you can answer this, but I'm trying to think as a coach here. Like when I work on systems in our gym too, you just described a situation which makes sense, when the ball is passed to this side of the floor, how is our offense flowing? How many different systems could you potentially train, or how many would you want to maximize that offensive efficiency?
Yeah, there's a lot. So there's perfect pass system. There's medium pass system, right? From 7 to 12 feet. There's out of system. There's sideline system. There's the 2-3 zone system. There's a 3-4 zone system.
This is really good, by the way. Don't,
yeah.
that's
So I'm just really I'm trying to go through my mind. Those are the main systems. But then there's balls that are, set from the corner of the court, like zone five. What do you want your hitter doing? Do you want him coming inside? Do you want him staying wide? Who do you want attacking that ball? If you set a ball down the sideline, it is coming over the shoulder of your opposite. That's probably not ideal, but how do you train that? And we just go through all those systems, and I think I'm probably most happy with our development of our program right now, because our guys, when a ball's pushed into a certain zone on the court, they know exactly what system they're supposed to run. And if they don't execute it and I blow the whistle, they already immediately know what they didn't execute on. So that volleyball IQ is what's really been honed over the last really 2 years here in this program.
That's fantastic. No, like just coming, looking at it from a macro perspective, just understand. Now I see what you mean by training with intention. Like you're putting your players into the situations that are going to occur in a game, and you're making sure that they know exactly how to react or be efficient given those situations. So absolutely, that's fantastic. Just so our listeners, I'm pretty sure our listeners know what perfect pass system is, medium pass system. Just to clear, medium pass is attack line ball.
Yeah, I would say it's anywhere from really 8 feet to 12, 15 feet. Depends on how extended your setter can get, and can they run tempo in medium system? If like there's gray areas too. So if you're in a medium system at 8 feet, you could still be in perfect pass to some degree, because can you set the quick from there, right? So
Right.
those, when we talk about decisions that have to be made, that's a decision, right? And
Right.
what spacing does your middle have? And then ultimately, what route is your back row guy on that can really, you're not landing on guys aren't drifting into a certain route. Because what happens if it like you run a medium system ball from where setter has to step back and off the net?
Yeah.
Are you on a bick? Maybe not,
Right.
because if the middle goes wide because the setter's off the net,
Right.
then that's in the middle in the path of the bick route, right? So you have to train that system to mitigate that from happening.
Right. Got
Yeah.
you. Out of system makes sense. You want a sideline system? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so if setter steps back and you're near the sideline, okay,
Okay, fair
so
enough. Makes sense. Yep.
is your opposite front row? And if he's front row, then if I'm 2 feet from the sideline, can I still set that ball straight up? And then where does the opposite go, right? So, if I get to the sideline, then I'm probably setting the ball inside a bit. If I'm 5 feet in from the sideline, then that's that gray area that you have to make a decision, right? So the opposite stays behind, set it, near the antenna and let them go take a rip.
Yep.
But that's a sideline system, and it's on both sides,
Gotcha.
front and
Makes
back.
sense. 3-4 zone, I'm assuming, is in between position 3 and 4.
Yep.
So what's the difference between a 2-3 zone and a perfect pass system?
Yeah, so my perfect pass is more middle of the court.
I gotcha.
Yeah, so it's designed to really create space between the opposite and the quick.
Gotcha.
So if a lot of left side guys are helping, and help them block area four guys.
Yep.
So by pushing the ball more middle of the court, we're able to stress that left side blocker a little bit more.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I love it. And then you got the corner system zone 5 when it's deep in the back. Okay. Well, this conversation has taken a turn that I didn't expect it, which is great. So I love it. So before I get into my other first question, you mentioned practice planning. Yeah, that was one of the things I learned about Sprott working with him too, just the amount of time this guy takes into practice planning and the it's like an art with him, and it's changed the way that I practice plan, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
So I ask you, so what goes into your process for practice planning?
So I sit with the staff and we talk about like what are the important things that we need to take care of for that day. And I've got Ali'i Kehoe who's phenomenal, and Lindsey Brown works for the offense, and she's doing an amazing job with our setters. But we talk about what our focuses are for that practice, and then we come up with our drills. So we usually have a package of blocking stuff, skill work that we do, one-arm work, footwork, and all that stuff is part of our normal practice, right? In design. And then what we really discuss, the meat of our practice plan design, is about what personnel. And now we're in a time of year where our personnel is not changing, right? So we know our starting lineup.
Right.
It's different in your fall practice block when you're thinking about what is your lineup, how do you develop competition within your team, how do you give setters reps with all different combinations of hitters. So we're running waves a lot. We're doing some, we do what we call a King Blur drill. It's we're the Ramblers, so King Blur. But it's like a king of court 6-on-6 style, but we change our setters often, and we do a lot of competitive drills and scoring the drills so that our guys feel like they're being evaluated, but they're also given a really good opportunity to be with some key guys. And how do they elevate their teammates, right? So we're fortunate to have three liberos and three really talented setters and four really good opposites, and I have seven middles, and a bunch of outsides that are all really talented. So we work them all in, and guys split time, and guys that have like Parker Van Buren, for instance, doesn't need as many reps as some other guys, right? So he goes in, touches the ball and feels good and runs a couple rotations, and then my other opposite will come in and run the other four rotations. So it's allowed us to really think about when we practice plan design, we're thinking about the end product first, right? What do we want at the end? And then how do we break it down and train it?
Okay, got it. Okay, I got a lot of takeaways here. This King Blur drill, that's pretty interesting. So 6-on-6 and change setters. Is there anything more interesting? Like free ball in
So
6-on-6? How does that work?
We run it in a three ball sequence. So it's a live serve, and it's really king of court. So you got 6-on-6 with one team off. We start everybody in rotation one. Okay. And you have to win three balls on the receiving side to rotate, to earn the rotation, right? So again, we get back into what do we want to work on. So the second and the third ball can be a variation of anything we want. We'll go live serve, and then I might do a float serve depending on who we're playing, right?
Love it.
And I'll live get my middles extra reps. So the middle that's off will serve for that team. And then the third ball might be a snap to the setter that the setter knocks off the court, and we'll work on sideline system. We'll work on different sort of systems. And then that team has to execute the three to then rotate. If they do that, they rotate, the serving team will be off, and the new team comes on in row one. So if the next sequence happens and the receiving side, which is in now row two, doesn't get the three in a row, then they're off. Team rolls through, they go off and then serve in row two.
Right.
So when I coached the junior national team, 2010, 11, we had 19 guys, and it was Taylor Sander, Taylor Crabb, Micah Christensen, that group of guys at that age. We ran this drill a lot, and it was really cool because I would do the drill and I'd say, okay, you have to go through 12 rotations to earn the win, and the drill's over. And then the next day I would change up the setters and I would move an outside from here to there, and I'd take,
Yeah.
Crabb and put him over with Steven Irvin. And it just kept it really competitive, and I just scored everything, and I scored wins and losses. And by the end, we had a really good product. So every
Yeah.
day was just some different focus. And it might be that, like, we're playing a team that's in system a lot. So, like, in 2018, when I was in UCLA, we played Long Beach State in the finals, and both teams, if in perfect pass within, and when I say perfect pass, I mean inside the 10-foot line from sideline to sideline, both teams were hitting over 700. So what does that tell you? You better serve
That's
the
right.
snot out of the ball, right?
That's right.
So, people always talk about missed serves, and listen, you don't serve tough, you're gonna lose.
Right.
So against a
Exactly.
team like that.
Yeah.
So, that's where I think, I might do a drill where it's a live serve and then two perfect pass spins, right? And then just let the team stay in perfect passed offense, right? Because I think, if I was to put a percentage on perfect passed offense or any other system, I'm probably spending 10% of our time in perfect pass offense because I know that we'll side out, right?
Right.
And the rest of the time I'm spending in medium pass, out of system, chaos situations, transition opportunities, right?
Yep.
Because that could be another one of your third balls, right? Is you might snap one to the serving team and then let your offensive side have to get a stop to then earn that rotation, right? Because how many times do we have that happen in a game?
Interesting. Yeah. No, that's fantastic. So if they don't get the three in a row,
Yeah.
the entire six comes off,
Yeah.
and then the other ones wave through to that side,
They do.
and then a new six comes on in the backcourt.
That's correct.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, if you don't have that many guys, like I'm blessed with having plenty of guys, the challenge becomes, okay, now it becomes an alternating toss game. So I go three balls one way, then three balls the other, three balls one way, and I just keep doing that, right? And we score it. So the scoring will be every ball's a point. It's not rocket science, right? So if you have a first team and a second team in balance, then you could score if the second side gets a kill out of the quick or a kill on the big, then you can give them 2 points, so you can weigh it however you want to weigh it. But fortunately, like, we're in a situation here at Loyola where we were the same at UCLA, where I don't have to weigh the drill. Our second side is really talented.
Okay, nice. Okay, that's pretty good with practice planning. I think I'm good there. I love the point system philosophy. Just you gotta when you score everything, it creates more competition and practice. Yeah, when I transitioned to doing that for our college guys, the competition level just went up. It was amazing
Yeah.
to see, what they did. Okay, let's go to my question that I was originally gonna plan on asking you first, which was, so a lot of questions I get from coaches is taking over a program. A lot of coaches are always changing teams or new teams or this and that. You're in a situation where you came in. So this is your second year, is it?
Yep, that's right.
Second year. So what was your approach when you got hired on coming into a program? What was your approach? What were your thought? Like, how did you talk to play? I don't know, everything. How was your planning? Like, talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's good. I feel like the first thing that I did was I wanted to build a trust with the guys. I wanted to get to know them. And so we did a lot of, just go to coffee, go have breakfast, meet with a small group in the office and just talk about their experience and what was important to them. So I think for me was trying to figure out what Loyola's I don't know what their goals and visions were, right, for their conference. 'Cause I've never been in the MEVA conference. So
Right.
I didn't even know where some of the schools were. Like I go, oh, we're gonna go play at Linwood. I didn't know where that was. Like I knew generally the direction, but I'd never been to the campus. So when we'd go to the games, I'd be like, hey, somebody's gotta direct us to the gym. Like our staff has no idea.
Yeah.
So I wanted to learn about like the guys and then what our goals were. And then I had to watch them play and evaluate them and then at the same time teach systems, right? And because the guys here in the program didn't play the system that I wanted to run, right? So it's educating those guys in the office through conversation about what the goals were for the staff for the team,
Right.
and then having a leadership structure in place that could handle communication between who I'm upper management, and then you got the players, and then you've got middle management, which is your captains, right?
Yeah.
So disseminating our information from a staff to them and then letting them give it to the team. Okay, about here's our practice gear, this is the expectations, and drawing really firm lines about drawing firm lines about, okay, there's no ambiguity with drugs or alcohol, things like that. Like,
Right.
here's where the line is. Be a college student, understand that I want you to enjoy your experience here. But so it's really setting these guidelines, right? That I didn't feel like this program really had coming in. And I think through conversation and you build that trust with guys, and guys just want to go and play hard for you then. But I was pretty honest with a lot of guys. Made a cut. And cut some guys that just weren't like in alignment with where we were going as a
Right.
program. And that was tough, you know, and I think everyone wants to say they want to be a leader, but not everyone's cut out for it. It's tough. Leadership is tough, right? And
Yeah.
not everybody can be treated the same, you know, and I think that's a pretty archaic way to think about leadership is that, you know, if I'm going to hold guys accountable, you know, which, you know, Sproul has some funny things about accountability. His line is when you tell guys to hold guys accountable on your team, it usually green lights the most dysfunctional on your team to have the loudest voice, right? You know, and it's pretty funny to watch, right?
Yeah.
And over the last, you know, bunch of years coaching with him, he actually went from not having captains at all to I think Micah Ma might have been his first captain in about 10 years.
No way, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah. And that's something you probably ask him his philosophy on that, but I don't want to speak on it. I know that we went to it because our team lacked, I think teams have to have a captain, you know, and that's my own opinion. We have four currently, and our leadership group has a subset of guys within that group. So each captain is responsible for a certain section of guys,
Yeah.
and they're random, you know. So it's not all freshmen or this, you know. It's a mix of guys, and there's academic reasons to do that. There's lots of reasons, personalities that just gel.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a tough personality in your team that you got to put with a strong leader, right? So I think a leadership structure is putting that in place. Starting a
Right.
new program is critical.
I agree. Yeah, no, I love that. And the more coaches I talk to at the university and college level, the more I'm hearing about leadership groups. like forming leadership groups and having them create accountability and being taking on more responsibility for the team. So I love that. Yeah. Let's just in terms of your culture, you know, I know you've been a part of a ton of programs. How would you describe the culture that you're trying to implement in your program?
One that there's 100% trust both directions, right? And the culture here at Loyola is surprisingly, like when I came in, I didn't realize how tight this group was and how much they do things outside of volleyball. They do everything together, and that can be like a double-edged sword, right? When you're with somebody all the time, that you can get annoyed by guys, right? Pretty quickly. Yeah. So I think there's a genuine love. And that's something I've done for a lot of my time as a coach is I'm not afraid to tell a guy on my team, I love him, you know? And if I'm saying it now, our guys say it back and it's, hey, love you too, coach, you know? And, you know, Alex Knight and Merrick McHenry, two guys at UCLA that I used to coach, or I'm texting them during senior day and I'm like, hey, I wish I could be there. And they're like, love you, man. And miss you.
Yeah.
So to me, having men say, I love you is there's like, I don't think you can be a true teammate until you, and I tell guys this, I remember having talking to Mitch Stahl about this. I go, tell me about your best friend on your team. And he goes, oh yeah, so-and-so. And he starts telling me his whole thing. And I said, what's his sister's name? And he goes, I don't know. What are his parents' names? I don't know. I'm like, this is your best friend? No, he's not. You know? So yeah. I think guys have to get to know each other deep that, you know, John and I talked about this is you got to be able to know who the guys are that are going to be in your dark alley, right? You know, that –
yeah,
when it's going down and it's tough and your parents are sick or your something bad is going on in your life, who's going to be in the dark alley with you and not judge you but just support you and then talk you through that, right? And I think that's ultimately what I think a culture should be about is knowing who those guys are. And if your team can play like that in practice and have a genuine love for each other, then it doesn't matter if I'm hitting zero one night and you come in for me, I'm going to love you for going in to help our team, right? Not resent you for taking my job, right? So I think that's where trust in communication and a genuine love, I think that's where culture, at least to me, is fostered.
I like that. Do you guys have anything special to Loyola in terms of, okay, I'll give you an example. So like in my gym, when athletes come in, they have to high five their teammates and coaching staff before they touch a ball. You know, before they leave, they got to do the same thing. You know, I know at other gyms, they have like you have to walk out with a teammate. John Spraz, when this year, he, I don't know if it was when you were there, but he's like, you have to walk out with a coach. That's something he implemented. Do you have anything that's specific to your team that you think brings the guys together or, you know, some kind of way that it helps enforce what you're talking about? Anything special you guys do? You don't have to, by the way. I'm just curious.
No, we don't. It's we start practice with video typically. So we talk in video about, you know, things we're watching or things that we want to go train. And then we'll walk out of there and we'll all walk together to the gym. But it's, and that's when conversations are happening. So when Coach Sproul talks about walking out with a coach, you actually, what they do, and we implemented this a few years back, and it was about how do you connect with guys, right?
Yeah.
And as a staff, what we started doing was we started doing a walk with coach. And it's so each coach then on staff would pick a player that day and walk out with them. And I've done some of that here. It's really effective. And those conversations go anywhere. Like it's never about playing time. It's always about family, girlfriends, academics, pressure, in honestly, it's unbelievable. Yeah, so you get some incredible things, and honestly, like if we're in the heat of a moment and I know that somebody's having some other thing, I can walk up to them and say, "Hey, your sister's here watching," you know, and you can say, and then they go, and now it refocuses them and gets them out of whatever funk they might be in.
Right.
So you can touch them with something personal. And I think that's where that connection can be really cool. So to answer your question, we don't do anything that's different from that.
Okay.
But we do have our guys come up and thank us after practice every single day and give us a high five or touch us with a fist or something. And you know, we have got, you know, just like you guys, and I'm sure you do this stuff where people come in your gym and it's like, hey, go shake their hand and get to know them. And I don't care if a player's missing a part of the drill to go have a conversation with a guest who spent time to come watch us play. And it might be our AD, who our AD knows all our guys, but
Right.
it could be a future boss of theirs, right? And that interaction might mean the difference between no job or an internship or something, right? So,
Right. Okay, fantastic. Okay, what I want to do is just do a quick recap of this amazing conversation. Tell me if I missed anything or anything you want to elaborate on. So we started off the conversation by talking about some of the things that some of the great programs you've been a part of and some commonalities, and you mentioned intention to train. You know, what is the purpose of the drill? What system are you trying to work? And then we dove into the perfect pass system, the medium pass system, which is about 8 to 12 feet, sometimes even 15 feet off the net. Your out of system, your sideline system, where the setter is near the sideline on both sides, the 2-3 zone system and the 3-4 zone system, as well as the corner system, which was like out of zone five, like really balls that are pushed deep. And then you also talked about the fact that practice planning is another big part of, you know, great programs. And I like that, you know, you sit down with the staff, you talk about what the focus of the practice are going to be on, you come up with the drills, and you say you have a package of all the stuff that you guys have to that you could do. The King Blur drill, I love that one, the 6-on-6. Three balls, and you have to win all three balls to get out of that rotation to rotate to the next one, which is really cool. And what I like is that you create the situations that you need to work on. So initiate with a serve, and then after the next two balls are going to be areas of system. Again, going back to that intention on what do we need to train, and it could depend on the team you're playing against. It could depend on your development, and I love that idea. I love the competition aspect of it too. It's like really encompassing development, competition, and what you need to work on as well. Is really, really cool. I like the idea of just scoring drills. You try to score anything you do in your gym as much as you can. And again, to create that competition, to create some purpose. And I personally think it creates motivation and more intention to train on the athlete standpoint.
Right.
I like that you talk about thinking, it's kind of like a backwards design planning. You think about what's the end product, like what do we want our end product to be. You design your practice from there, so that's really cool. In education, we do the exact same thing as well. So there's definitely a method to there. Then we talked about taking over a program. Your first idea was building trust with the guys. You go have breakfast, lunch, you know, small group meetings. You really want to learn about the guys and see exactly what the goals are. I love the having leadership in place. That's really, really important, having leadership in place and implementing your system, because you talked about the fact that you wanted to run a different system. In order to do that, you got to build your trust. You got to get to know the guys. You got to put together some leadership in place. And then you had to make the tough cuts, like you mentioned. So, really good advice there. And then your culture. I've never heard this before, but this is such a great point. You know, not only do you want to have 100% trust in both directions, but you want genuine love on the team. And I love that. It doesn't matter, you know, whether you're 20 men, you can say, "I love you," and you can mean it, and you can have that unity, that trust, that bond with the guys, which is absolutely amazing. I love that. And interesting, you know, you starting practice with video, and then you take the walk over to the court to have those great conversations, and then you start your practice, which you talked about. Did I forget anything? Did I leave anything out? Anything you want to elaborate on?
Well, no, I mean, there's obviously the strength conditioning component to it, you know, and
Sure.
it's I think your weight room has to be a reflection of your gym, you know? So if you're competitive in the gym, you got to be competitive in the weight room. And so I think that's another big piece to it, that we're lifting today. We're lifting, you know, right before we get on a bus to go ahead to a semifinal that we play Thursday. So we're lifting all the way through, hopefully, the championships.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we got to have you back on. This was too short. We got to have you back on the pod. We talked about some great things. We took this conversation completely in a different direction than I wanted to, but that's a great part of it. I love it. Getting a chance to, it's just coaches having a conversation. So it is amazing. Any final thoughts before we let you go, John, about anything to our listeners?
No, I think we all are in a really cool profession, and the impact that we can make on these kids we can take it anywhere we want. And I think I've taken this from Coach Sprawl, that I want guys that we want to graduate mature men, right? Men that can go be successful in the world. And I really like that. I think just where kids are nowadays with social media and the, I don't know, really the mess that is, it's getting guys that can go stand on their own 2 feet and look somebody in the eye and shake their hand and sit at somebody's dinner table and have a meaningful conversation. And then be able to take care of somebody else. I think that's the impact that we all have. And I'm just stoked to be a part of this community.
Love it. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing today. I know that I took a ton of notes. I know our listeners might have to re-listen to this, take a ton of notes. There's great stuff. I love just the mentality of the working the systems. Like, that's something that coaches don't really talk about on this pod. So it was a really cool element of it. And I think there's so much value to that. So Coach John, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to be here. For our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Volleyball by Design podcast. I'll see you guys next week. Take care.
Boom.
All right, cue the music. Look, are you at the stage you want to be in your volleyball journey? How would it feel to get clarity on your training, and instead of taking months to get better, you could improve in weeks, if not days? When I was a young coach and player, I felt this way all the time. The truth is, after I got some great advice on how to be efficient, my learning curve grew exponentially. Let me show you how to be more efficient and effective in this game. I invite you to check out CoachBTraining.com for more resources that you can use to take your game to the next level. I look forward to helping you reach your volleyball goals.